Welcome to the Bureau Briefing. Before we get started, I want to thank our sponsors. They are amazing. Thank you to MailChimp. If you need a marketing platform, MailChimp is so much more than just email. They help you with Facebook ads, with Google ads. You just got to check them out. And the way that you can slice and dice the campaigns, it's beautiful. 10,000 feet. You know, if you need insights into your projects and your people, 10,000 feet is the resourcing tool that can help you with that. And also, gather content. Content is always the thing that drags every project down. But when you use Gather Content, you can get a handle on it. And now, let's get on with the show.
Welcome to the Bureau Briefing, a podcast by the Bureau of Digital, an organization devoted to giving digital professionals the support system they never had. Each episode, we're going to talk to a member of our community doing awesome, inspiring things. Now for your host, Carl Smith.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the Bureau Briefing. Swinging by the Bureau Studios today, we have the former CEO of Smallbox, which is a creative shop in Indianapolis, and the current CEO of Boardable, which is board management software, is Mr. Jeb Banner. How are you doing, Jeb?
Great. Thanks for having me, Carl.
I appreciate you being here. You know, when we met years ago at one of the Bureau events, and I remember listening to you talk about Smallbox, and you had a bunch of other side projects at the same time. And I was like, this is a guy who is just going to keep experimenting and keep doing things. And then one day, he's going to fall in love with something he's doing. Now, I could be wrong, but what I was hoping we could do today is kind of talk about that decision to move on from Smallbox and go full-time with Boardable. Does that sound good?
Yeah, let's talk.
So Smallbox, how long has Smallbox been around? Talk about starting it and your passion for it and kind of what led you to this point.
Yeah, Smallbox was founded in 2006. I'd been running, as a number two to an auction business before that. We're using web marketing and web design to grow that business. And I decided that that was more what I was interested in than selling stuff. And we grew from being mostly a dev shop, building custom content management systems into more of a full marketing agency, SEO, SEM, all that stuff. Then into brand as we continue to evolve while dabbling in a lot of different things along the way, which is what you alluded to. We a couple nonprofits spun out of the business, Musical Family Tree and the Speakeasy. A number of other businesses spun out of there, a record label, another agency, a little creative shop, a couple other businesses. And I was always experimenting with different ways to productize what we were doing, and never really finding something I could land on. We built a content management tool for like wrangling content, you know, as you build a website. Right. We built an employee engagement platform that we use internally and started to launch with some customers. And as we kind of, fished about for that product, I increasingly fatigued my team who were just wanting to do... As you can imagine, we just wanted to do great creative work, which is what they've been hired to do. And they had a CEO that was restless and wanting to kind of find the product. Over the last couple of years, we had an opportunity with one of our customers here in town, United Way of Central Indiana, where they came to us asking for a board portal. And we'd built a number of products through the years for customers, and it had been a little bit hard to watch those businesses take off with the tools we'd given them. And we saw an opportunity to do something different this time, and we took a risk and spun off a little incubator, if you will, with my partner Joe, and he and another partner in Boardable, Jason Ward. The two of them really concepted this. I have to give them credit. Jason really saw this opportunity and said, let's go ahead and build a beta version on our own dime and then bring it back to them. instead of just building the portal, which would have cost a lot more money, and then not been evergreen and updated, et cetera. So that was really the genesis of where Boardable came from.
And so Boardable came into being a couple of years ago. Is that right?
Yep. Early 2016. The conversations may have even started in 2015. But by the end of 2016, we had a pretty good 1.0. We had some early adopters on the platform, and we were beginning to raise money. So over the course of that year, we began to see that we were moving towards a business.
Okay, so you began to raise money. Did you have any experience with that going into this, or was that something that was fresh for you?
I had zero experience. Well, not zero, but very little. So we brought in, this is something that we could dig into further if you're interested, but I really think the alchemy of the founders is super critical for a product company, any business, but a product company, because there's just all these areas that you need to be thinking about, and fundraising is definitely a big piece of that. We brought in Andy Clark, who is an early guy at Exact Target, which is a company here in Indy that sold.
I know that company. Yeah. We used Exact Target back in the day.
Sure. Yeah. They went public and then sold to Salesforce. And so he had a lot of experience. He was the guy that did a lot of their acquisitions. And he was one of my partners in doing the speakeasy. And so we brought him in early as a co-founder, right after we had the beta built. And he said, oh, I see this, you know, I see the need. He was chairing the speakeasy board at the time. And he was really a super important add to the team, because the three of us knew how to get that far, but we didn't necessarily know how to get to the next stage. And he helped us work with attorneys and learned how to talk the pitch deck and everything else, and became critical in our fundraising.
So earlier this year, or the beginning of this year, I think you said, is when you went full-time with Boardable. Is that right?
Correct.
So what was it? What was the trigger that made you say, okay, beginning of the year, I'm going Boardable full-time?
Well, you know, when you're raising money, the investors are understandably asking who's running this business. And at the time, I was running both businesses, and I think I was running both of them pretty poorly, in the sense that I was a pretty distracted CEO on both sides. I was fortunate to have really good people on both sides. And it was also during that time, my wife had joined Smallbox, initially part-time, just to help us build out our educational offerings, training, et cetera. But over the course of that summer, it was becoming clear that Boardable was ramping up. We were raising, you know, we ended up raising $1.35 million.
And oh, congrats.
Thanks. And when you start raising that kind of money, people start understandably saying, hey, we need to make a call here. And so I was feeling called towards it. I had been doing Smallbox for 12 years. I was feeling a little burned out, to be honest, on the service world. And I was really excited about this opportunity. And I really have a passion to help nonprofits. They need better tools. I think they've been neglected by a lot of the tech industry, but that's another story. So I did my annual week in the woods in July, where I go off by myself for a week and think about stuff. And when I came back, it was just really clear that I had to start moving things more quickly. And so then I went to my wife and said, hey, are you up for this? And she was, but she also said, this was not my plan. I was not planning to be a CEO of a business. I don't know if this is what I want to do, but I'm going to give it a try. And so that was, to be honest, it was a very stressful time for us as a couple, in terms of our marriage.
And I know Jenny from hanging out more than a few times, mm-hmm. and she seems amazing.
She is.
So, and she is a truth teller, boy. So she's not going to hold back. And I think that's probably makes for a great CEO, but also makes for a great partner in life as well as business. So I can imagine the way that she told you, this was not my plan. You said it very calmly.
No, she was very graceful about it. And, you know, we had many, many conversations, and honestly, we had some professional help, you know, we needed it. And I think, you know, when you go through a life change like this, you really do need to do whatever you can to protect the marriage. I think we've come out on the other side much closer and much healthier. But, you know, Q4 and Q1 were pretty tough, to be honest.
Right.
And because Smallbox was not in great shape, I had been neglecting that business because my heart really wasn't in it, you know, as much as it had been. And when you have a CEO that's off doing something new, it has impacts in sales and everything else. She has completely turned that around and revitalized that business, and it's the healthiest it's been in quite a while. It's all making sense now, right? But getting there was really hard, and it was there was a lot of days where I had to kind of just drag myself through the day.
Well, 12 years is a long time. 12 years, I think. I know for me, that was when I fell out of love with running my company. And I think for you to have that opportunity and then see that money get raised, which is, I mean, that's validation. Yeah. That other people think the idea is great as well. And then you've got all this trust in Jenny to kick Smallbox in the ass and get it going again. And she obviously does, because she's able to focus on it. And probably I would imagine when she first looks at it, it's like, okay, I just got to figure this out. But she's got you as a consultant on the side a little bit. So one of the things that's amazing to me in this whole transition is I remember talking with more than a few people who've been funded, and they say the one thing you don't realize at first is that people want you to spend this money. And they want you to spend it quickly, right? They don't want you to. When you come out of the service side, you're used to being a good steward of the budget. Mm-hmm. And you have to do the same thing on the product side, but that doesn't mean don't spend it now and get the damn thing done. So how was that transition for you mentally to come into an environment where you don't necessarily have clients anymore, but now you've got investors, people that you've got to show things to? What was that transition like for you?
I think it's a transition I'm still going through, to be honest. It's a mindset shift going from a service to a product mentality. And this affects all kinds of different areas of my role as a CEO. For instance, being in the service world, I feel like that's a very talent-centric culture by nature, because you're selling the talents of the people that work there. So you really do cater to talent, and you cater to the needs of your employees. And I think that's good. That's what the business model is. It's a little different in the product world. You're very customer centric, but you're customer centric in an interesting way. If one customer says they have to have something or they're not going to buy the product, you don't bend over backwards. You say, well, that's not where we're going with the product. And you move on to the next customer, while still listening to the chorus very closely. So that's a big, big shift in terms of like spending. Yeah. I mean, it's weird to run a company that's in deficit month after month. And the thing that is encouraging to the investors is like, well, that deficit's getting smaller every month, you know?
Yeah.
Right. So, you are supposed to run in the red, and you often are asking yourself, are we underinvesting? You know, are we not being aggressive enough? And so much of this business is about building a foundation to then layer on. So like a marketing foundation, a product foundation. And then you have to ask yourself, like, is the foundation ready to be 2x or 3x? Like, in other words, have we figured out how to put a dollar in and get three out? Can we put in another $1,000 here, another $1,000 there? And so in the measurement and metrics and data becomes extremely important in a product business, and in a way that the service business could perhaps become more so, but just doesn't have the same need to constantly measure to inform spend.
So you had an on-ramp time period while you're running both companies. And then you start at the beginning of this year. I'm just curious, what does your education curve look like? How did you get yourself smart?
I think I'm getting myself smart. I, Well, I'll give you a little bit more practical response, but I mean, I'm learning. It's a fire hose experience, you know.
Right.
And it wasn't like I had no product knowledge because we built product for customers, but building product and actually running a product company are very different because there's just the mechanics of a product business are so radically different than a service business. But so I built an advisory board, and this is something that, again, Andy Clark was fundamental in. And we brought in some very seasoned people like Jay Love, who built a number of companies and sold them in the nonprofit tech space. People on the marketing side, the governance side, and we set up quarterly meetings and then worked with them one-on-one. We have a board that meets monthly. I meet with my investors regularly. I seek out people that are smarter than me. I am constantly buying people lunch and breakfast that run product companies and saying, how'd you do this? What happened when you were at this stage? What should I be doing now? It's very much being in a constant beginner's mindset, and which is easier to do for me right now because I am.
you're a beginner.
If I was starting another agency, I'd probably be a lot cockier and think like, I've got this, you know. But I don't. I need help, and I don't know the answers. And I'm learning really fast, which is exciting. Like I'm learning every day, and that's something that I missed a little bit. Running small boxes, I felt like I didn't have as many new places to explore in terms of my own talent set.
Right. So personally, you were kind of stifled.
Mm-hmm. Not that I didn't. I particularly loved working with great talented people and working with great clients, but it felt like a treadmill. And I felt like I just, that whole hours for dollars thing was just kind of wearing me out.
So being in Indianapolis, how many of the people that you're working with and the people on your board are local, and how much of it is a travel situation?
Well, our customers are global. But of course it's a product, so it can go wherever it wants to go. But in terms of the advisory board, the board and the investors, the vast majority are within driving distance local. We have a fractional CFO that lives in Naperville. We have a board member that lives in Warsaw, Indiana. But otherwise, they're all pretty much in this area. And it's one of the nice things about Central Indiana, because of ExactTarget and some of these other companies that have been built and sold, there's a wealth of talent. We just brought on a chief product officer that was number two at ExactTarget just exited as chief product officer of Emma. And he's coming on fractionally with us. Again, somebody much smarter than me, knows product inside and out. There's so much talent here right now. It's rich with talent. So it's a good place to be.
So what does the team look like right now at Boardable?
Sure. So we've got 5 full-time employees and 4 fractional or part-time employees. And we're about to make our 6th full-time hire, which will be a content marketing manager. So you have myself, you have another person in sales, Brittany. You have Joe, who does product. You have Ashley, who's director of operations and oversees marketing, customer success, and ops. Then you have Krista Martin, who's our director of product. And then we have fractional for marketing, for customer success, for CFO, CPO. And then we also have a bookkeeper, fractional.
And then what is your day look like? Do you have a typical day?
Less than I did in the agency world. One thing that's been interesting is I'm not in back-to-back meetings as much. I was this week, which was kind of crazy, but my days are a little bit more open because I'm in more of a sales role. So I'm doing a lot of follow-up and engagement because after we stopped fundraising, I immediately switched my time to sales. So it's usually get going around 8 a.m., sometimes do a breakfast with somebody. Usually I have a morning meeting, most likely internal. Then I usually have a demo at some point in the morning or the afternoon, maybe 2 demos done remotely, screen share. Often have a lunch meeting, generally 2 to 3 meetings a day. My day is focused often on moving deals forward and closing. And then the bigger strategic pieces. We had a 3-hour board meeting yesterday. Had an advisory board meeting earlier this week. So there's a lot of times I'm having these more strategic sessions. And so I'm preparing for them I'm creating content for them. I'm going over the numbers. I'm working with the CFO. So, you know, the typical CEO stuff of just making sure that all of the different pieces are moving in the right direction.
Now this question doesn't, I don't have any insight. Nobody's contacted me and asked me to ask you this, but do you feel lonely? Because the CEO of a service shop, it can be very lonely. And I'm just wondering, on the product side, does that correlate, or do you find that you're more of the team?
I feel much less lonely than I did in the service world, because I made the mistake, and I think if I could go back in time, I would do this differently, of not building an advisory board. I didn't have an advisory board. I certainly didn't have a board. I had a co-founder, but he's not really, wasn't involved in the business in the same way as you would have like a board member. But, you know, I talked to Andy Clark, who I mentioned earlier, who's the chair of our board. I talked to him almost every day. And when we come up to key moments, I'm engaged with him, with Jason Ward, who's also on the board now, with Audrey Beckman, who's on the board, with our advisors. No, I don't feel like I did before, because I'm surrounded. And also, there's an accountability layer that's in place here that's been very healthy for me and helpful. Because before, I didn't have anyone to answer to, really. I could kind of call the shots and make decisions that almost weren't the right decisions. But now I have to explain myself to a board and to investors and advisors and to employees that have ownership in the company. And I really, I think that this is a good dynamic for me. I need some accountability.
So I think this concept of advisory board, and obviously you're at Boardable, so you have to have a board.
Right.
You don't have a choice.
It would be
really bad. Not exactly. But this idea of an advisory board, I could be wrong, but I think it's probably foreign to most people that are running digital shops. So can you just talk about how you decided who to invite? Like what skill sets or roles or personalities you were trying to put on the board?
Absolutely. So you look at like, where are the areas of the business? You have product, you have marketing, you have customer success. You've got the space itself, governance, board governance. You've got the industry in terms of nonprofit tech. You've got different areas of debt, like finance, that you want depth in. And you go out and you try to find some of the best people. Obviously, technology being one of those too. Some of the best people that are around in each of those different zones. And you try to have at least one person for each of those bases, if you will. And then they get a stock stipend. So they get stock, and it's a 2-year term, and with quarterly meetings. And then we bring them in for one-on-one consultations as we get to different decision points in their area of expertise. And that's just been super critical for us, and it remains so.
And that makes sense. Like the way you just laid it out and described it makes sense, but I don't know that I ever would have gotten there. You know, I mean, but then that's part of what you're saying. You're finding people who've been there. You're finding people who've had the experience to help you along. So that makes perfect sense.
Yeah. I think I should have done it with Smallbox years ago. It would have been very beneficial to have people that I had to report out to quarterly who could ask the hard questions. It's very easy for a CEO to convince their employees of the crazy idea they just came up with, right? And it's different for an outside group who can look at more objectively and say, you know, they call bullshit.
Yeah. Well, what advice would you have for digital shop owners who are thinking about taking the leap?
My number one advice, and this is not really new advice, is don't try to serve two masters. Now, you may say, well, isn't that what you did? Yes and no. We really separated Boardable in terms of its incubation from Smallbox. They were operationally completely separate, different founders, different DNA there. And so don't try to turn your service business into a product business. I know 37 Signals did it way back when, but boy, I think that's sent a lot of people down the wrong rabbit holes, maybe you can pull off the hat trick. But I think the best thing to do is if you have a product opportunity, build a team around that opportunity, give it autonomy, put it outside of your, accounting, outside of your, leadership team, everything else, let it exist separately. Even if you're sharing some back office things, it needs to have that autonomy. Don't try to just make it a project in your company. And then I think, you've got to, at some point, just make the leap. If you're really committed to doing that, you got to make the leap. Otherwise, it's going to starve without leadership. If you're the leader that needs to be leading it.
Well, Jeb, I'm happy for you. It feels like you got out and found something new, and I'm happy. I want to check back in, like maybe early next year, and see what's changed and keep the story going. Does that sound good?
Yeah, I'd love to. I always love talking with you, and I love the Bureau Owner Camp community. I really have a heart for the agencies and the work they're doing, and they're just great people. So any chance to share my journey with them and to bring any kind of value I can, I'd be happy.
Well, thanks again for swinging by. All the best with Boardable. And to everybody listening, thank you so much. And we'll be back next week.
Thanks.
All the best.